Hey, I'm Dean Hall, and these are the Red Bull Basement Sessions.
Dean Hall is the creator of hugely successful computer games like DayZ and Icarus.
DayZ started out as a mod. Yeah, it was very popular, drove huge sales of the game.
As well as the founder of video games company Rocketworks. Survival, danger, and zombies. In this world, there is only one rule. Stay alive. Inspired by real-life survival training from his time in the New Zealand Army,
it was pretty clear pretty quickly I was never going back to the military. That wasn't going to happen.
Dean clearly knows more than most about navigating the toughest of environments.
Survival is fascinating. I think it's just an inbuilt part of us.
When he's not designing award-winning video games, Dean is often found pursuing his passion of mountaineering.
I was so scared as I was going up it because it was so far beyond my skill level.
And has even made it to the peak of the world's highest mountain, Everest. So it's probably no surprise that he goes by the nickname Rocket.
It's the part that makes a good story later on.
We meet Dean and have a chat about how failure is an important part of success and how using it can help you move forward in your career and in your life.
Hey, I'm Dean Hall. I'm the chief executive of video game studio Rocketworks. I'm an adventurer and a flag-waving New Zealander.
Are you ready for a few quick-fire questions?
Oh, I'm just absolutely burning for it. Let's do it.
Love it. Okay, question one. So apart from your phone and laptop, what is the number one gadget that you just can't do without?
I reckon would be my AirPods. They've kind of changed my life, actually. I just feel like being able to just have music on the go at any step is pretty amazing, really.
Totally agree. I've got a pair of headphones in my pockets pretty much 24/7. So, all right, newspaper or news app?
News app. I mean, come on. Unless you're like wrapping up like fish and chips or something, you know.
Do you keep a to-do list? And if you do, is it on your phone, your laptop, or is it old school paper?
I keep several to-do lists. Like I have to-do lists for my to-do list on my phone.
What is your favorite color and why?
I can tell you the exact hex code for my favorite color. 336699. Go look it up, right? It is the best like pastel blue color. I won't accept any other answers. It's also my color, I own that, so, you know.
All right, mountains or sea, and why?
Oh, that's a crawl. That's like asking to choose between two children or something. I'm gonna choose sea. And I can't believe I'm choosing that because I love the mountains. But the beach is just, there's just something about it. It's just relaxing, the sound of the beach. Sometimes when I'm like cooking food, I'll like ask Google to, you know, play ocean sounds. So I'm going to choose beach. I'm sorry, mountains.
Great. Yeah, I like that. How do you keep determined even when others tell you it's impossible?
I really feel like if there's one thing that people, myself included, can take a long time to kind of figure out, it's getting that inner voice. You've simultaneously got to kind of be motivating yourself at the same time as going easy on yourself. And I think that's a big part of it. The internal monologue of how you're doing can either talk you out of being able to do something or, you know, or talk you into it. That to me seems like it's really the key part of it, keeping going.
That was the quickfire round, and now we get onto the main part of the show. Global innovators and the entrepreneurial spirit is what Red Bull Basement is all about at its core. So how does your work force you to innovate?
So I think there's almost two forces pushing towards innovation. One is the customers who want interesting experiences. You can't just go and pull a game from 10 years ago and make it again because people's expectations have moved on. But also internally, I think if you're a game developer, the thing you want to do is make cool stuff that people like and cool new stuff that people go, wow, that was a great idea. And for me, that goes back to when I was a kid and playing video games that I just kind of got lost in. And I think I'd hear the names of people who made them and I was like, I want to be like that.
You've mentioned a lot in the past that you like learning through failure, especially at your studio Rocketworks. So do you have any specific examples of failure and maybe what you learned because of it?
I suppose the first thing I'd say, I don't necessarily like learning through failure. And I think that's the big thing. Like, I don't think anyone likes failure. We like to talk about fail fast and we like to talk about failure is important. But I think the core of it is that we don't like failure. It's like we don't like being in pain, we don't like hurting and all those kinds of things. But they're an important part of life, right? Like, how would you know what feeling good is if you don't feel bad sometimes? And how would you know what success is if you haven't failed? I like to think of it as you've got to thread the needle with failure. It's very easy for you to have a failure, take it way too personally and just stop. And then also identify what success looks like for you. For me, success is I just enjoy moving fast on my own, right? It's the same reason I like wakeboarding. I'm pretty good at wakeboarding, actually, though. Just put that out there. But so, you know, knowing what success is a really important part of it that I actually think people forget. It's like, how many meetings have you been in where you didn't know why you were there? And I sort of apply that to everything. It's like if you're in a meeting, if you start a meeting and you don't know what the purpose of the meeting is or why you're there, that is a waste of time. And it's kind of the same with doing a business or an idea or an event or something like that. What does success look like to you? And if you can't answer that, then you're not going to be able to handle the failure or the success because you're not going to know what it is.
And do you think we need to be teaching people more about these strategies to actually deal with failure in like productive ways?
I definitely think New Zealanders, particularly, we're not good at failure. I would argue sometimes, and I know it's bad because you can't sort of generalize entire countries, but culturally, I think Americans are really good at failure. Failure is just sort of this blip that happens on the way to success, and know that failure is not catastrophic, that they can use failure and that failure doesn't define them, but it can be used to, you know, build success that defines them.
Was game design always on your mind, even when you were serving in the military?
Our cousins got a Commodore 64. It was a long time ago, obviously, and I would have been maybe like 9 or 10. I spent the whole day on it. You know, I came from a tiny little town in New Zealand, so I didn't, you know, think that I'd be a video game designer. There weren't video games designers in New Zealand. You know, the internet barely existed. Video games were made by people from the UK or America. That was where the video games came from. So it wasn't something I thought about. But I started, you know, trying to mod games and trying to make games myself, but never with a view that that would be what I did. That just didn't occur to me that that would be a thing. But yeah, I was always doing it when I was in the military. One of the advantages of the military, at least ours, I lived on base. So, you know, I'd finish work about 4:30 in the afternoon and I'd have a lot of spare time. And I'd pretty much spend all that time making or playing games.
Speaking of your games, so for someone who doesn't know, could you just tell me what DayZ is and what makes it or made it so unique?
DayZ started out as a mod, a modification of an existing game called Armor, which was a pretty famous milsim game, military simulator. And it was like a really realistic kind of battlefield. So realistic, in fact, that there was a commercial variant of it called VBS that was used and still used by a lot of militaries around the world. And I was in the military at the time, and I was modding that game a lot and helping out our military with using it as a training tool as well. And I had a bad injury in the army, and I was kind of annoyed at the army because they kept downgrading me medically. So I was a little bit annoyed, and I figured I didn't want to be treading water. So I took a leave of absence. They let me take up to a year off to go work for a company in the Czech Republic. And while I was there, I worked on this mod and I released it for free. It drove this video game being very popular. And it's basically like taking a really realistic shooter, but adding zombies and other players. And then it was very popular, drove huge sales of the game. And then the company actually came to me while I was working there and said, can we buy it off you? And can we hire you and get you to turn it into a real product? And And here we are.
So you went from serving in the military 1 year to then designing and releasing official games the next, right? You released the game in December 2013, and within 24 hours, you sold over 170,000 copies. So could you take me back to that moment? Like, what was going through your head?
Yeah, I mean, I guess even before that, it was really crazy. I remember when the mod was really kicking off, and I kind of knew, I figured out pretty quickly, you can see how stuff scales. And I think through things I'd done previously, you know, basically playing, running little gaming groups, I knew what good numbers were. And these were so far in front of that in terms of how it was growing. So I was really making sure I was ready to capitalize on success. I was very careful, but really there was a before and after moment. And I often think about it, it's really kind of like I died. My whole previous life was just gone. And in the space of a few days, really, I mean, it was pretty clear pretty quickly I was never going back to the military. That wasn't going to happen. You know, I didn't come from a wealthy family, and you know, suddenly just money wasn't going to be a problem, and the impact that was going to have on my life.
So you go from that, you create your company, Rocketworks, and then that brings us up to today and your most recent game, Icarus, just dropped in December of 2021.
We were doing a pretty bold take on the survival genre. And we, you know, we had a rocky launch. And when I talk about that second act being tough with your business idea or project, I think Icarus was a great example of that, is that it was all easy to be excited and awesome about it at the start when it's just a big idea. But the ideas are kind of worthless. It's actually concepts and then taking that concept and pulling it through to fruition. That's the hard bit. You can almost take a bad idea, and if you can turn that bad idea into a concept and deliver it, that's actually better than just trying to find the best idea. Because it's getting through that second act, which is a real challenge for us. So we're kind of in the third act with Icarus, where we've overcome the big problems of it. You know, we're starting to look to the good part of it, where we can actually tidy up all the stuff we struggled with before.
What I really want to know is, how did you get the nickname Rocket?
Yeah, so it started out my first video game job. So they started hazing me by calling me Glenn. That's not my name. There's no Glenn associated with me at all. Because I was interested in space, it sort of became Rocket Glenn. And there was actually someone called Glenn who worked at the studio, and they were on leave and they came back and everybody was calling me Glenn or Rocket Glenn. So they were kind of a bit like, well, this is super weird. So then the Glenn kind of got dropped off and I just became Rocket. So I just sort of owned it. It was always good with hazing, right, to just kind of own it.
So we know that you design some of people's favorite survival games, but you're not just stuck at your desk. You've been through some pretty intense life survival adventures yourself. You've done things like crossing the South Pole and climbing Mount Everest. What is it that makes you want to continuously challenge yourself like this?
There's a whole bunch of reasons why survival is fascinating. I think it's just an inbuilt part of us. So I think for me, the drive to feel what those experiences are like is really what pushes me towards that. And I think about when I was a kid and I'd read about adventure, it was the emotional part of it that really drew me into it. But I think for me, you never feel more like yourself than when the decisions I need to make are really clear cut. So, you know, when you're climbing, things just become crystal clear. It's not clouded with a whole bunch of weird questions of this or that. It's just, okay, these are the things that I need to do to stay alive. And everything becomes very obvious and sensible and clear, and motivations are very simple and pure. And I can remember the most difficult experience I had mountaineering was not on Mount Everest. It was on this mountain called Mount Darwin in New Zealand, and I was climbing the Lost Japanese Bolt Buttress. It was this route on the mountain that people didn't know where it was. We found out why, because the entire face that had that had actually fallen off. And I remember I was so scared as I was going up it, because it was so far beyond my skill level, that I was negotiating with myself. I was like, I'll keep going, but if it gets any more difficult, I'm just going to let go and just die. And I remember my hands were shaking and I'd look down and the skin was off my knuckles from trying to climb. And I remember getting off the route after we got off the route and come back down and jumped onto the glacier. And that feeling of being alive, I can't describe it. And this is like 20 years ago and I can still feel it. I can still feel that there was nothing more certain to me than at that moment of how good it was to be alive and to be in that moment. So I think for me, that's probably the big draw.
Would you say that's one of those before and after moments that you were talking about earlier?
Yeah, I think it is a before and after thing, but I think a lot of people do identify with that. If maybe they don't sort of understand it innately or they get little bits of it, but I think there's a lot of things that we do in life that make us aware of being alive, and I think they're really important.
Amazing. If you could do anything at all, what would be your moonshot?
I'd probably pick the moon, actually, in general. Yeah, no, or Mars. I'm really into space. I absolutely love space. I'm fascinated with exploring, and I'd love, if I was going to do anything, I think I'd love to run an asteroid mining company. That would be my jam. I might be a little bit old for that to pull through, though. I feel like I might need to be about 10 years younger, but we'll see.
So that was Dean Hall, video games developer, explorer, and all-round adventurer. Next time, we meet Dennis Keskin, director of brand management at the world-famous car manufacturer Porsche.
It's a reason why a lot of young people develop their passion for Porsche. So, for instance, I'm one of these guys who love Need for Speed Porsche Edition, and it certainly helped me to develop an affinity towards the brand.
He'll be sharing his top tips on how to innovate whilst remaining competitive in a world of luxury, style, and speed. Red Bull Basement is not just a podcast. It's an initiative to support impactful, feasible, and creative tech ideas from student innovators from around the world and support these changemakers in realizing their vision. Follow Red Bull Basement sessions on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And visit redbullbasement.com to find more stories from innovators who are driving positive change around the world.